One morning, when I was in the bathroom vomiting, Tammy came and pounded on the door. "Carolyn, Merrill had a heart attack this morning. The ambulance is here to take him to the hospital. Barbara's going with him and the rest of us will meet him at the ER." Tammy drove the small family car and I sat in the back seat, upset and so sick it was hard to stop vomiting. What if Merrill died? I was terrified. If Merrill died, I'd be forced to remarry. There was no way around it. Women I knew in the community who were assigned to marry other men after their husbands' deaths always ended up in more desperate situations. I honestly did not know how I could survive in a family if I was treated any worse. I prayed hard for Merrill to live. My children were so young, and I was pregnant with another. We would be completely vulnerable if we were moved into another family. Barbara became the spokesperson for the family. She stayed with Merrill around the clock, but she was very secretive, at least with the other wives. She confided more in his daughters. His condition was not good. His heart had been permanently damaged from a massive attack. It was touch and go for several days. When he failed to improve, he was transferred to University Hospital in Salt Lake for bypass surgery. He went on a life flight. We made the 5-hour trip the next day in a caravan of cars. Merrill did not do well in surgery. The next week was a nightmare. He got a staph infection and became septic. His kidneys started shutting down, and he was put on life support. I was sure he was going to die. I couldn't stand being away from my children, but we had no choice. All of Merrill's wives were required to keep a vigil while he was hospitalized. People stared at us in the hospital. I felt like an alien when I went into the cafeteria. Rumors were circulating that a polygamist was in the ICU. I heard two janitors talking in the hallway saying, "Six wives, what does he do with them?" Finally, Merrill improved enough to return home. We flew back to Colorado City on Uncle Rulon's private plane. Warren Jeff's power began to be solidified when Uncle Rulon had his first stroke in 1996. The community was informed when he was taken to the hospital, and there was deep concern. After his release, we were told that he had his full mental capacity, but was still very ill. He had to be mentally fit in order to remain as the prophet. But since no one was allowed to see him after his stroke, I began to think that something was up. Now I'm convinced that he was kept out of sight because he wasn't competent enough to continue in his leadership role. Throughout 1997, Jeffs moved to solidify his hold on the community. He made it clear that he was speaking for his father. People accepted this because before he got sick, Uncle Rulon had made it evident that Warren spoke for him. At one of the priesthood meetings shortly after Jeffs moved his father to Colorado City, he announced that his father had decreed that there would no longer be immorality among his people. Any man who had been involved with immorality would have to leave his family and the community. Men were given pamphlets that spelled out the new moral code. All sex in marriage was forbidden except that which was for procreation. Immoral acts for which there could be no forgiveness were also named. Any person who committed these sins, such as fornication and adultery, would have to pay for them with blood atonement. I had never heard of blood atonement before. Blood atonement is a murder. Warren claimed the ordinance of blood atonement dated back to the beginning of the Mormon Church. But he said that blood atonement could only be practiced in a temple that he said we would build in the near future.